you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 12th of November 2016. My name's Harry Wood Fenton. Great to have you with us today. Well, it's been quite a week, hasn't it? Really epoch-making, and the election of Donald Trump is certainly going to change the course of history, and I'm hoping for the better. I have to say, I was surprised. I knew that he was very popular, and I knew that he was more popular than what the polls were showing. But I also believed that the power of the polls and the power of the propaganda of the media was such that it would get Hillary Clinton over the line. But now I have to say, and I'm pleased to say it, I was wrong. And I don't know how great it's going to be, having Donald Trump as the President of the United States. I know it's going to be different. Well, I certainly hope it's going to be different. I believe it's going to be different. It may end up being less different than some of us hope for, because of course, the President is always going to be controlled to some extent by the deep state and by all of those factors that are there within the institutions. But the indications are that we have averted a very, very serious situation with Russia, which I think is probably the most important of all the considerations, at least for the time being. And while we're talking about Russia, I've got a great interview coming up, and that's coming up in the next segment, with the editor-in-chief of a Russian news organization, Russia Beyond the Headlines. And this is a relative newcomer to the media in Russia. And it's a news organization which is more focused on Russian internal news and politics. So unlike RT, which goes out around the world and has a lot of reporting about international events, RBTH focuses on Russian society, Russian political trends, Russian culture, geography, a lot of interesting material on their website. And I've actually entered into an arrangement with RBTH whereby I'm going to be sharing some of their material, kind of a loose partnership. And I'm very pleased with that. And I'm inviting on the show the editor-in-chief to speak with us. So that will be in the next segment, and it will be for the rest of the show, and we'll be covering, talking a lot about the Russian reaction to the election, what the different perceptions of that are, and what Russia's involvement is in regard to the Middle East from his perspective, which is a little bit different to what we see on RT. And what I've noticed with RBTH is it's a slightly more critical, slightly more reflective viewpoint than the Russian broadcaster RT, which tends to take a little bit more strongly nationalist line in the way they report Russian foreign affairs. Now, I want to play to you just a few clips in relation to the election from couple of sources that I respect. And then I actually want to play to you another clip about some interesting facts about Donald Trump that I did not know. But I'm going to begin with John Pilger, and he's talking here on RT, actually. In fact, both of the interviews are on RT. And he's talking about the elections, and he begins with his view about Hillary Clinton, and then they get into it discussing a little bit about Donald Trump as well. So I'll just begin with that. Here we go.
She is clearly the embodiment of a corrupt system. She is the embodiment of a very dangerous warmongering system that has declared the world a place where it can go to war wherever it likes, where it can bomb agricultural communities in Yemen, where half the children are malnourished. Where it can do what it likes in Syria, do what it likes in Iraq. I think most of humanity regards that kind of behavior from the allegedly most powerful country in the world as abhorrent. And she is has been the embodiment of that. Now, whether Trump will be is an open question. He says he's anti-establishment, but of course he'll come with his own establishment. He's anti their establishment. I don't believe for a moment that he's anti the wider establishment of the United States. Indeed, he's a product of it. But, you know, the shock surprise is the same as the Brexit vote. A kind of how dare these people vent their frustrations at the ballot box. The truth is there was no one to vote for in the United States. There was perhaps Sanders earlier on, but he was a kind of a minority populist candidate with a large following, yes. But the system threw up those who could afford it. Trump had his own money. Clinton was backed by the Democratic Party. Clinton was backed by the arms company. She was the only candidate that among her financial backers included all but one of the 10 leading arms manufacturers in the world. People, for all kinds of reasons, don't like this. Mainly, the main reason is what has happened to their lives. The way a corrupt banking system has destroyed their lives, has destroyed jobs, destroyed whole cities and towns, the towns that the Democratic Party once claimed to represent. That's what they don't like, and that's why they voted for Trump. I would have thought they would have voted for a Trump.
I'll just leave it there because I want to play to you now a short clip from an interview with Ron Paul. It's worth watching that whole interview with John Pilger. Pilger has great integrity, and he's had a very restrained view on Donald Trump all through the year. And this is in contrast to so many of those in the intellectual left, probably a lot of the people of the milieu with which John Pilger associates. He's held back from attacking Donald Trump. He did call Donald Trump odious in one article, but especially increasingly over the more recent months, he's really held back from any direct criticism of Donald Trump. And he acknowledges that Trump's policies look to be averting a horrific confrontation with Russia. So congratulations, John Pilger, for being a voice of truth, of balance, of reason, and of even going against the grain of your own political leanings. I mean, really, really, I greatly admire John Pilger. He's shown himself to be able to adapt, to see facts. He's not a political person. He's someone who seeks for truth. And the same, I believe, applies to Ron Paul. And I'm going to play to you an interview with Ron Paul, just a few minutes of it, because then I've got something else I want to play. But just a quick clip here from Ron Paul talking about Trump and what is to come.
Well, what I'm concerned about and where I'll get some better information will be when we find out who he appoints to the cabinet and who he's talking to. And already we have some hints. Unfortunately, there's been several neoconservatives that are getting closer to Trump, and if he gets their advice from him, then I don't think that's a good sign. During the campaign, he did talk a little bit about backing off and being less confrontational with Russia, and I like that. But he criticized some of the wars on the Middle East. At the same time, he believed we should accelerate, you know, the war against ISIS and right. terrorism and all, without showing me that he has an understanding of exactly what causes terrorism. Right. So I will look for who he appoints and where he's getting his advice. But right now, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but from experience, from previous elections, most of the time we don't get what we hear. Yeah. They don't follow through on their promises. In Trump's case, who knows what he promised? You know, he's been pretty vague on foreign policy.
It's true. That's true. I mean, he had the article in the National Interest, if I'm not mistaken, and it was very realist in outlook, but it had some what I thought to be some kind of contradictory trends there. One thing I worry about is recent history, because we had Barack Obama, a liberal Democrat, elected, and he ended up being surrounded by some of the most egregious neocons and very adventurous foreign policy. Now, he's made that very clear in a number of ways that that's not what he wants to do. He doesn't want to pursue stupid wars. Is it going to be that difficult to reach out into the foreign policy establishment where he's going to be able to get some new thinking? Because a lot of Republicans turned their back on him in the foreign policy sphere during the campaign.
Yeah, you talk about contradictions. With Obama, he ended up with the Nobel Prize for Peace.
Yeah.
So that is enough to confuse us. But, you know, when we look at the president, we look at what he said, we look at what he might do, we look at his advisors. But quite frankly, there's an outside source, which we refer to as a deep state,
right,
or a shadow government. There's a lot of influence by people that are actually more powerful than our government itself, our president and all. I mean, you take, for instance, how our government gets involved in elections around the world.
Yep.
You know, whether it's in the Middle East or Ukraine, we've been very much involved, and we've done this for more than 50 years. And so that isn't known to the public. Matter of fact, all we do is see the downside decades later, where there may be some blowback. So
just leave it there, because I want to very quickly now play to you a clip about Donald Trump, which may provide a little bit of insight into some of the forces that are working on Donald Trump that are not even necessarily about the deep state. This is a clip about Donald Trump's Jewish affiliations, and it is presented in a positive light by a Jewish YouTube channel, the Rebel Media, and they're proud of it. But just listen to this, because this is quite surprising. I did not know these facts. So just have a quick listen to this before we go to break. Then we'll be having our interview with the editor-in-chief of RBTH. Here we go.
Here's a fact I don't really want conspiracy theorists to hear. All of Donald Trump's children are either married to or dating Jews. All of them. The most famous of his kids, Ivanka Trump, she married Jared Kushner, who's Jewish, and she converted to Judaism herself. She actually took a Jewish name, Yael Trump. Her kids, Trump's grandkids, are Jewish. They probably call him Zadie. But it's not just Ivanka. Donald Jr. is married to Vanessa Hayden, who's Jewish. Eric Trump is married to Lara Unaska, who's Jewish. They married under a Jewish chuppah or wedding canopy at Mar-a-Lago, an exclusive club that used to ban Jews until Trump filed a massive lawsuit against the bigots to let the Jews in. And then there's Tiffany Trump, Donald Trump's other daughter by Marla Maples. She's not married yet, but she's dating a Jewish man named Ross Mechanic. Trump has one more kid with Melania. His name is Barron. He's just 10. So it's not yet five kids out of five who were with Jews, but I wouldn't bet against Barron dating a Jew, would you?
That's all we have time for. It's worth watching the whole video, because there's a lot more to it than just his children as well. Anyway, we are going to break, and we're coming back with a great interview. Stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And today my guest is Seva Pulya from the Russian media organization Russia Behind the Headlines. And we are going to be talking today about a few topics. We're going to begin with talking, of course, about the US election, which is so incredibly important. But then we're going to get into some of the other foreign policy issues and questions about Russia's perception around the world and the way the media has represented that. And then we'll also explain a little bit about this organization, which many listeners may not be aware of. So without further ado, let me welcome Seva Pulya to the show. Welcome to Truth News Radio Australia.
Hi, Herbert. It's my pleasure to be with you today.
Absolutely. Now, did I get your pronunciation right? I should have checked it with you first. Can you tell me your correct pronunciation of your name?
It's Seva Pulya.
Seva Pulya. Okay, great. I was reasonably close. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, very close.
Great. Well, look, thanks so much for coming on the show today. And I would like to begin with talking about the US election, because it's been such a momentous event, really a world-changing event. And there is no country in the world which is probably going to be more affected by this than Russia, because of the dramatic change, we hope, that this will bring in terms of US foreign policy towards Russia. And, of course, Russia and the United States are really two of the most powerful countries in the world, still really the world's two superpowers. And the prospect, I find, this is just my personal view, the prospect that we may be moving towards a world wherein there is a rapprochement, a détente between the US and Russia, is to me an incredibly heartwarming development. But I'd like to get your perspective on it, because obviously there have been a lot of negatives about Donald Trump, and I know a lot of people, even in Russia, probably are suspicious of Donald Trump, and most people in Australia are highly suspicious of Donald Trump. But then there are many of us who've followed some of the key points of his platform and his foreign policy. And for me, the most important part of it, really the overriding part of it for me, has been his commitment to working with Russia, both in terms of sort of building a better bilateral relationship, but also in terms of dealing with the disaster that is happening in Syria right now. So if you could just give me your perspective, and also anything you can tell us about the general Russian reaction to this, as you understand it.
Yeah, sure. So, first of all, I have to say that U.S.-Russia relations have hit their lowest point probably since the Cold War in the last couple of years, because of the Ukraine crisis, because of Syria, and everything. And the next step could have been just doing a proxy war in Syria, where like Russia and U.S. fight each other, but not on each soil, on each other country's soil, but fight in Syria. So Donald Trump has been viewed as a, of course, pro-Russian candidate. So all the public polls carried out in Russia showed strong support for Donald Trump. So if Russians would have chosen a U.S. president, they would also choose Donald Trump, because he made quite a few remarks about Russia. He said that he could work with Putin. He said he could build strong relations with Russia and solve the crisis together. Like, one of his famous quotes was like, if Putin wants to fight ISIS, want to destroy ISIS, the Islamic State, then why we should be against it? We should join our forces and smash the terrorists. But later, like, he made all these remarks probably half a year ago. But later he changed his rhetorics, and he was very cautious, probably because of his advisors who told him that he could alienate a lot of his supporters who were against Russian politics. So he was more cautious in his remarks, and I can't say that we are 100% sure that he will be a pro-Russian president, or a president who would lead a policy that is very much not like the policy of Obama or any other, or Hillary Clinton, because as you know, as we all know, that the U.S. president is not a czar. He's not an emperor. He doesn't have absolute power. He has his aides, he has vice presidents, he has Congress, and he has to take their opinion as a something that he should listen to, or and he couldn't act without their support. And there are a lot of people in Trump's team who sort of, we call them hawks, because they strongly anti-Russian, like take Mike Pence, who is well, the main candidate for vice president, and he's anti-Russian. He expressed a lot of anti-Russian views, and he's strongly against Russian politics in Syria and Ukraine. So probably Donald would tell him, like, come on, I will handle it, but probably not. So it's really trying to make something out of a crystal ball right now, to look into a crystal ball and just predict. We don't have any 100% strong indications that the policy of the U.S. under Trump would be much different from what Obama has done. Because Donald Trump is an unpredicted president. Like, nobody expected him to win. I mean, out of media professionals, out of a lot of Clinton supporters. And actually, he got 100,000 less votes than Clinton. It's just because of the two-step electoral system in the U.S. that allowed him to win.
Indeed. And if it were merely the popular vote, then Hillary would probably have won. And that's largely, as I understand it, because of the high concentration of foreign people, Latinos and other people in the urban areas, who are against Trump in en masse, but up to about 80 or 90%. But another very interesting point that this raises with the surprise factor of the election is the increasing untrustworthiness of Western media and even Western polling, because the way in which Donald Trump was represented, the probabilities, and I was watching this very closely all the way up to the election, basically gave him at best about a 20% chance of winning the election. And this is completely refuted by the actual election results. And I think what we're seeing is the bulk of people, and not just in the US but around the world, really starting to understand that the media, which is largely controlled by the same monopolistic groups all around the world, whether it's Australia, the US, the UK, Europe, works to an agenda, and it is not reliable in giving you even facts such as who is winning in the polls. And to me, this actually says something very interesting as well about the different relationship now between the West and Russia. Because for many years, people used to look at Russian propaganda as being, you know, the absolute epitome of crude propaganda back in the Soviet era, when everything that came out of the official Soviet publications was simply the propaganda position of a regime. But now what we're seeing is that coming out of Russia, and your organization is another one that maybe a lot of people aren't aware of, we're seeing a much more balanced approach. And if you look at the coverage that we've seen on RT over the years, it's really provided more balance and more perspective and more journalistic integrity than what we've seen in the West. Just a quick response to that before we go to break.
I was also observing the electoral campaign in the U.S. with much interest, and I was also surprised that all the media in the U.S., like I couldn't read a single pro-Trump article mainstream media in the U.S. And
absolutely. Sorry to cut you off. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And my guest today is Sieva Pulya, Editor-in-Chief of Russia Behind the Headlines, a relatively new player in the Russian media field, which is primarily text-based. They don't have a 24-hour news feed like RT, but we're just now covering some of the aspects of that. So I'd like to welcome back Sieva. Perhaps you'd like to continue where you left off there before the break, describing your reaction to the US election results and the surprising result, considering the way it had been covered in the media.
Yeah, so talking about all the pro-Clinton articles, all the pro-Clinton coverage that we could have seen in the U.S. media, I can say that, of course, Russia is still not a fully democratic state. We have a lot of issues with our authorities and with our government. But what we have seen in the during the U.S. electoral campaign, when a lot of news outlets were literally attacking Donald Trump and using like swear words in their articles.
Yes.
We couldn't have imagined this in Russian media because it would inevitably be a lawsuit to the editor for insulting the candidate. Like I was really astonished by the level of debate in the U.S. media about who is better, Donald or Hillary, which was like something like you could see in school where kids were bullying each other and just shouting insults at each other. That was really surprising.
Yes, it really it sinks to a new low. The media has sunk to a new low, and I think the disgust of the general public towards the media has reached a new point. And it seems to me that we've reached a new threshold. Like, this is really going to be a change now. And I think even had Donald Trump not won the election, we still would have reached a threshold of change because there was just that much consternation and people are so fed up with a system that seems to be where the strings are being pulled by elites who are controlling people's perceptions through media, through biased polling methods, and through the sort of the general propaganda about the Western policies in the world, which are increasingly looking so destructive, so negative for peace and prosperity around the world. And let's talk a little about that, because culminating with this election, we're also seeing the culmination of the conflict in Syria and in Iraq. And it looks to me like it can't last too much longer. Things are going to have to change. And we need to be moving towards a different way of resolving issues on this earth. And hopefully, with this new regime in Washington, we will see an approach which starts to work cooperatively with Russia, as Trump has said he would do, but also to end this underlying corruption which is supportive of regimes in the world which are incredibly destructive, incredibly against human rights. And finally, what I'm most concerned about is the ending of the domination of the media by the propaganda that is just rampant in Western media. And let's just talk a little about Syria and what your perspective is on the coverage of Syria from general Western media, as opposed to what you know about what is going on in Syria and what the Russian policy there is.
Yeah, well, about media coverage, I think that we can see rampant propaganda everywhere. I can see a lot of rampant propaganda in Russian media. All media is biased, whether it's general politics bias, or it could be a business. It could be like biased in business because of the business interests. But what could be done here, I think, is that we should think more about media literacy of the people who are reading this. Like my view is that media literacy should be taught in school, at schools, like we do with math or languages or physics.
Yes.
Because people should know that you can't be objective when you work in journalism. You could try to be balanced, but objectivity is something that is achieved not by, you know, reading only one media outlet. So people should know who is behind the certain news outlet, and just try to make their own views, to make their own use out of what they can read in different sources. And that's why I think it's really important that we have news outlets who can broadcast in foreign languages from other countries. Because I can't say that I could formulate the balanced view of what's happening in Syria by reading only Russian media. And I can't, again, I can't make the same position by reading U.S. media. So it's only achieved by knowing different points of view on the problem. And when you have sort of a critical mass of information, you can make your own decisions of what's going on there. You can understand what's really going on there. And speaking about Syria, well, everyone is pursuing their interest there because, you know, Syria was the only country who was blocking the oil pipeline project going from Saudi Arabia to Europe. And it could have influenced Russian interests in Europe because, you know, Europe is dependent on Russian gas. So, and U.S., of course, was playing their anti-ISIS card there.
Yes.
But what was really their goal? Maybe to make Europe less dependent on Russian natural resources. So it's a big chess game, and you should be a real expert to know what's going on there. And that's why I think that there is a strong demand from the public for more explanatory news outlets who not only tell you the news, not only give you headlines or breaking news, but try to explain what's really going on there.
Absolutely. And I think that's a role largely being provided by alternative media now, and which is also breaking the back of the attempts to corral people into believing one particular view of what is going on. Can I ask, does IBTH have reporters on the ground in Syria and other places, or are you more Russia internal focused?
Well, we are more Russia internal focused,
yeah.
Because we don't have the same ambitions as RT, who,
yeah,
is rivaling CNN or BBC. Of course, we are, like, from one point of view, we are a global project because we are publishing our stories in 15 different languages. But from the other point of view, we are a very niche resource because we are only writing about Russia. And to have a reporter in Syria, you have to get a certain papers or certain allowance from the Russian Ministry of Defense to be allowed on the military base. One of our reporters was on a press tour to the Russian military base in Khmeimim, and he wrote a few stories from there. But we don't have anyone on a permanent basis there.
We
see ourselves as not a media that someone will read at first when they wake up and just fire up our website on their phones. No, we are aimed at those who are interested in Russia, who want to learn more about Russia, who want to see some real coverage from the ground. Because I see a lot of articles in Western media with the headline, "What's inside Putin's head?" You can't get inside Putin's head sitting like overseas from the other side of the pond. We also can't get into Putin's head, but we are much closer and we have a lot of context. And we are trying to bring all the news we are telling into that context and try to explain why Russia is making certain decisions, why Russia is go into certain, like, interfere.
We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
I welcome back, you with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking today to Sieva Pulya of Russia Behind the Headlines, and this is a news organization focused largely on giving you an understanding of what is going on inside Russia. And I'd like to just stay on the question, though, of foreign policy for a bit, Sieva, because if we're talking about what is going on inside Russia, can you give me an idea of what is the perception and what do Russian people think about what Russia is doing in Syria? And what is your perspective on it? Because we get such a biased view of it from our own media, and there is such a lack of other forms of reporting coming from that part of the world. Obviously, it's very dangerous to go there, and so basically we see the reports from RT. We occasionally see reports from the BBC, but even the BBC is pretty shy to go in there now. It's mainly reports coming from RT, but we're not really getting a lot of perspective. And we've seen totally conflicting interpretations of what is happening in Aleppo. And RT is basically trying to convince us that what is going on in Aleppo is about protecting the Syrian people from a very, very violent and ruthless insurgency, and doing so with military means and using munitions that are also supplied by the Syrian government, which are obviously killing a lot of people. And there's been all of this massive controversy over the Syrian barrel bombs, as they're so described, that the Syrian government is using, and attacks on Russia's use of weaponry against the population of Aleppo. But the Russian perspective on it, and the perspective that we're certainly getting from RT, is that this is being done for the same reasons that the US-led coalition in Mosul is attacking ISIS, and it's obviously leading to civilian casualties. But we just get such a biased view of it, and I'm just keen to know, like, is there a different perspective on this from your end?
Well, of course, as I've already said, everyone is pursuing their own interests. And
yes.
In my opinion, there is more about supplying gas from Saudi Arabia to Europe than about fighting ISIS.
Mm.
And this is actually the main goal of both Russia and U.S. The U.S. wants to, you know, to influence the politics. They have no interest in Syria and what's going on in Syria. And Russia also didn't have any interest in what's going on in Syria. I haven't heard about Syria like 3 years ago. I didn't know that this country existed. Well,
wow.
Maybe I'm over.
yeah.
But yeah, and, you know, most Russians even can't find Syria on map. Couldn't find before, like 1 year ago. It was just one of the countries in the Middle East. Something about Arabic tales, you know, Damascus, from Aladdin. But now, of course, when all the state media are telling people about what's going on in Syria and that our fighter jets are fighting terrorists, a lot of people have strong patriotic feelings that Russia is a big player on a global arena. We help fight terrorists. We are in a, you know, global coalition fighting terrorists. That's how it's portrayed on Russian state TV, and that's what the main feelings of the people who just watch TV and get their news from one source of news. So I clearly see the picture here. Of course, US media try to to tell their people that Russia is actually helping Assad and not fighting ISIS, because there were a lot of controversy about where our strikes directed at.
Yes.
Whether it's Assad's opposition or it's ISIS terrorists. But we have the same questions to the U.S. military strikes. Like, are you fighting the Islamic State terrorists, or are you just helping to overthrow Assad and make this oil pipe to Europe from Saudi Arabia? So it's really a very complicated situation that we have come to there. And like, speaking about how media portrays it, it's really simple. Like, we help to fight terrorists, and it's the same on both sides.
Yeah.
In Russia, in the U.S. But the real goals of both countries are much, much deeper, and they are much more complicated than just fight ISIS. Because otherwise, I'm pretty sure that if we have strong will to defeat Islamic State, we should just launch a ground operation and wipe these terrorists in a couple of months. But, like, we, both U.S. and Russia, we are in the muddle there in Syria. We are just dragging resources out of both of our countries and not really coming to a victory over Islamic State.
Yeah, I have to say,
the goals are,
I have to say, I agree with you. I mean, it seems to have been taking longer than it need to have done when you consider the amount of firepower that the U.S. and Russia combined have. And the rhetoric that has gone with, you know, the intention to wipe out ISIS. And yet, you know, year after year goes by and they're still in control of huge amounts of territory. And then we hear stories about having Toyota, for example, having sold them thousands of SUVs and just massive amounts of funding still coming into ISIS, which of course is going to giving them weapons, giving them ability to move. And so whoever's controlling that is working, and this is obviously coming from very big power sources in the world, is working against any kind of end to this. It would be great if we could understand more about who the forces are at work that are trying to prolong this conflict, and, you know, what is the prognosis of that?
Yeah, there are a lot of countries in the region with their own interests. Like, take Turkey, for example.
Yeah.
When we have uncovered the supply chain of oil coming from ISIS to Turkey, because they were buying this oil at very cheap prices.
Yeah.
And probably, I can't say for sure, but probably our Russian fighter jet was shut down a year ago. Because we were really close, because we were bombing these oil supply chains coming to Turkey, and of course they didn't like it. And
right.
there was definitely a violation of airspace of Turkey by a Russian fighter jet, but it was only 7 seconds.
And they certainly made a big deal of that. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah,
big incident.
And they shut down our fighter jet because it just violated the airspace by 7 seconds. But the real reason was probably that oil supply chain from ISIS. So you see, there are a lot of players in the region with their own interests, with their own views on how to resolve the conflict or how to fight ISIS. But the true goals of each country are very different from what they are saying in their media.
That's very interesting. Can you just give me a quick overview of our BTH? When was the organization formed?
Yeah, well, it's actually called Russia Beyond the Headlines, but a lot of people are calling it Russia Behind the Headlines just because it's really easy to confuse these two words. The news organization was launched in 2007, and the idea was to produce print supplements published with the world leading newspapers. So we used to have a supplement published with the New York Times, with the Washington Post, with the Daily Telegraph, Le Figaro. We also actually published a supplement with Sydney Morning Post or something. The Age.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did have this supplement published in Australia, and it was a very successful end of war because we got their audience, we got access to their audience, and of course we played by the these newspapers' rules. So we made all our content like we follow the editorial standards. I can't say that a single story was biased there. Like, we provided different points of view. We provided a lot of context and background. And we continue to do that on our online resources now. And now we, when we are closing our print supplements, we are developing as well our syndication model. So we provide a constant stream of content for different publications all over the world who just want to get some on-the-ground reporting from Russia. And I can say that RPGH is more like a online magazine than a news website. So we, our strongest content is feature stories, interviews, reports from distant corners of Russia, because it's a very big country.
So you're providing information about Russian culture, things that would be interested, perhaps related to tourism as well, things that give people a deeper understanding of the Russian people and that type of thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, of course, politics, business, investment opportunities, sports, different various points, various topics. We cover all of them.
Yeah, it sounds great as another source of information from Russia. And in terms of your political coverage, it also seems that you're providing more balance. I mean, it's still a government-funded organization, is that correct?
Sure, yeah. We got some money. Like, it's mixed. We got a great share of money from Российская газета, which is state-funded, but we're also earning some money by advertising and by syndicating our content to other news outlets.
Excellent. But it sounds to me like, from what you've been saying, that the nuance from what you've been saying is that you're a little, possibly going to be a little more critical as well of things that are going on in Russia. So you're providing a different perspective to what we're seeing from other sources in Russia. And I think that's really, really important. And I'm really looking forward to learning more about RBTH and getting some of your articles published on our site. I've got a relationship with your organisation now. So I'm looking forward to continue to work with you.
Thanks, Kirward. It's a pleasure for us.
Indeed. Look, thanks for coming on this week, Sevier, and that is the end of our show for this week. Truth News Australia will be back again next week. Thank you very much, Sevier Pouliot.
Thank you.